Recently, the BMJ published an analysis of ways to rule out pulmonary embolism in primary care. The analysis featured a data set of some 600 patients with suspected pulmonary embolism whose outcomes were known. Their clinical data were used to evaluate and validate several prediction models that could be readily used in primary care. We have with us one of the paper's authors, Dr. Geert-Jan Geersing, a family practitioner and member of the Department of Epidemiology and General Practice in the University Medical Center in Utrecht, Netherlands. Welcome, Dr. Geersing.
Thank you. Welcome.
You started out considering 10 prediction models, but settled on evaluating five of them. Why not the others?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think the most important reason for that is that we wanted to validate models that were readily applicable in primary care or family medicine. So the other models that are available as well, they need some advanced analysis of a chest X-ray, for example, or blood gas analysis, and we believe that, that usually those kind of tests are not available in a primary care office. So we only validated the five models that we had data on and included variables that could be measured in a primary care office.
I see.
So that's the reason.
So the patients against whom you validated these models, their outcomes were already known. They had undergone, they were people from primary care practices who were, I guess they were finally admitted to a hospital for evaluation. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So what we did is we asked the family medicine specialists in my country to score a case record form in indeed nearly 600 patients, mm-hmm. including all the variables that we needed for the validation of the models. And then afterwards, they performed a D-dimer test, which was a point-of-care D-dimer test. And regardless of the result of this test or regardless of the variables that were scored, we asked them to refer all patients to a secondary care facility for further workup.
I see. So as we said at the beginning, you knew the outcomes of all of these patients and you then
yes.
used their data to evaluate the accuracy of those tests. And you did use D-dimer testing, a point of care D-dimer test.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did. We asked them to get the point of care D-dimer test in all patients.
Okay.
And again, regardless of the result, we asked also them to refer them to the hospital, and then the diagnostic workup would depend on what the hospital specialist would feel as being the most the best way to evaluate the symptoms. So in the end, we also had 3 months of follow-up. We asked the family medicine specialist what was the outcome of each patient
okay.
based on all these tests that were done in the hospital.
So the five tests that you evaluated, the five approaches, were they were various forms of the Wells rule and the Geneva tests. So would you take us through the results that you found?
Yeah, so we had these five models, and basically what they do is more or less the same with each model, only the included variables are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So each model first ranks the patients in being a high-risk patient or a low-risk patient, and then in the low-risk patients, when the D-dimer is negative, then that model approach tells us that PE is actually excluded, so PE is pulmonary embolism.
Mm-hmm.
So what we found is that for all these models, more or less combined with this D-dimer test, categorized about 40 to 50% of all suspected patients into a rule-out category.
Mm-hmm.
And then what, of course, is most important is what would be your proportion of pulmonary embolism cases that are still present in this rule-out category.
Yes.
And what we found is that for the Wells models, this proportion is well below 2%, which is generally regarded as an acceptable low proportion of pulmonary embolism cases. For the Geneva models, it was slightly higher, around 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So we concluded that for rule out pulmonary embolism in primary care, the Wells models actually perform best in terms of ruling out the disease in the office of the family medicine specialist.
Okay.
I think that's the most important result.
The Geneva score was failed at about rate of about 3%, and the Wells rule failed at about half that, about 1.5%. So it seems like a small difference, but it's a significant difference, isn't it?
Yes, it's significant for the simplified Wells rule as compared to some of the Geneva models,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's also clinically relevant because it's a serious disease,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want to miss it. So in that situation, I think missing 1.5% or missing 3% can make a difference for the patient.
Yes.
And also, we know that even the most invasive tests done in the hospital also miss a small proportion of pulmonary embolism cases, which is also around 1.5%. So that's the reason why usually a proportion of missing 1 to 1.5% is deemed acceptable, because there's no test in this world that can miss 0% of pulmonary embolism cases, unfortunately, but that's the truth. So you always miss a small proportion of cases, and we felt that if this diagnostic model as applied in a primary care office works as good as the most invasive hospital test, then that would be okay. And that's not something that only we say. It's generally accepted in the literature that missing about 1.5% is deemed acceptable.
Uh-huh. There was an editorial in that issue of the BMJ, and it said that the D-dimer test that you used wasn't universally available. The editorial was written from the United States. Is that D-dimer mm-hmm. test generally available in the Netherlands?
Yes, currently it is. I think there are other point of care tests available as well. So I think in the United States. So I don't think that would mean a big difference. Even the test that we used wasn't the most sensitive test,
mm-hmm.
and the editorial rightly pointed that out, that there are other tests available that are even better. And of course, you could always also use a laboratory test if that's convenient for your type of patient. If you have a laboratory close by to your practice and you can do a test there, I think that's okay as well.
Mm-hmm.
The test that we used in this study was a quantitative test, which I'm not sure what the availability now in the United States is. You have to call, of course, the manufacturer of the test for that. But
yeah.
I know that there are other point-of-care tests available that are used as well in Canada and in the United States. And we even, in another publication, if you are really interested in this topic, we evaluated the cost-effectiveness of these point-of-care tests.
Mm-hmm.
It's by the main first author of this publication as well, Dr. Hendrickson.
Uh-huh.
So if you're really interested in this topic, you can find other tests in the literature as well. For instance, by searching in PubMed on the first author name of this publication, Dr. Hendrickson.
The editorialist recommends, instead of using the Wells rule, the PERC test, or the PERC rule. And he points out that the PERC rule that he recommends using would have found the three missed cases that the Wells rule missed. What's your response to that?
Yes, we try to validate the PERC rule as well. The PERC stands for Pulmonary Embolism Rule Out Criteria,
mm-hmm.
and it's a rule that's being developed by some colleagues from the emergency departments, mainly led by Jeffrey Klein. So I know the rule quite well. And the reason why we couldn't validate it was because it needed results from an oxygen saturation, which I think can be done in a primary care office, but we didn't have data on this variable.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how this PERC rule would work in this family medicine cohort of patients. The PERC rule has been developed dominantly for use at an emergency department, where Also in the United States, there's a very low threshold for testing for pulmonary embolism. Mm-hmm. So the approach for this rule is slightly different from how we feel it works in the family care medicine office.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think it can be used as well, but we were unable to validate it. So I think that's something for future studies.
Okay. And so what would you like clinicians to take away from your results? What's key for them that they should know as a result of your work?
The most important thing from our study is that if you work in a primary care office, then what we found is that, yes, you can rule out pulmonary embolism in your office using one of the models that we validated combined with the D-dimer test. And if you do so, you only need to refer about half of all the suspected patients to the hospital. And all the other patients, you don't need to refer them. I think that's the most important thing. So you don't need to refer all cases of suspected pulmonary embolism to a hospital.
Is there an approach that they should do differently?
Yeah, so I think what currently still is being used also by family medicine specialists is that they refer all the suspected patients to a hospital setting.
Okay.
I think that's something that ourselves can change. So I think the most important thing that's different from what they already do now is that you don't need to refer all the suspected patients to the hospital. So if you see one of those patients with shortness of breath and you think pulmonary embolism is one of the possible causes, then what you should do is use one of the models, and particularly the Wells models perform well in a family care setting, and perform a D-dimer test, and you can reassure the patient if both are negative, if the model yields a low probability and the D-dimer test is also negative, that you can reassure the patient that pulmonary embolism is likely not one of the causes and you don't need the patient to get referred to the hospital.
Okay.
And I think that's different from what at least in my country, what still is being done is refer all the suspected patients to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where the patient has to wait in the emergency department for test results to come in, and it's of course very costly and also sometimes a nuisance for patients. And if that's no longer needed and you can safely rule out the possibility of pulmonary embolism in your office during the consultation of the patient, I think that's something that's really a benefit for patients and also for our healthcare system in general.
I agree. All right, well, I want to thank you, Dr. Gearsing, for your time with us today.
That's no problem. Thank you, Joe, and enjoy the podcast.
That was our 184th podcast. The others are all available and searchable at podcasts.jwatch.org. Kristen Kelly is the executive producer. For the NEJM Group, I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening.